On this 25th day of July, 2006, we are studying the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary, by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And today we are beginning Chapter 2, entitled Contents of the Gita Summarized. Text number 1. Sanjaya Huvacha Tantata Kapaya Vishtam Ashupona collectionam Vishidantamidam vakyam Uvachamanusudanaha. Translation. Sanjaya said, seeing Arjun full of compassion, his mind depressed, his eyes full of tears, Madhusudan, Krishna, spoke the following words. Purport. Material compassion, lamentation, and tears are all signs of ignorance of the real self. Compassion for the eternal soul is self-realization. The word Madhusudana is significant in this verse. Lord Krishna killed the demon Madhu. And now Arjun wanted Krishna to kill the demon of misunderstanding that had overtaken him in the discharge of his duty. No one knows where compassion should be applied. Compassion for the dress of a drowning man is senseless. A man fallen in the ocean of nescience cannot be saved simply by rescuing his outward dress, the gross material body. One who does not know this and laments for the outward dress is called a shudra, or one who laments unnecessarily. Arjun was a kshatriya, and this conduct was not expected from him. Lord Krishna, however, can dissipate the lamentation of the ignorant man, and for this purpose the Bhagavad Gita was sung by him. This chapter instructs us in self-realization by an analytical study of the material body and the spirit soul, as explained by the Supreme Authority, Lord Sri Krishna. This realization is possible when one works without attachment to fruitive results and is situated in the fixed conception of the real self. Om Agyan Tamadandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him. So Arjun was full of compassion, but his compassion was misdirected. The fact that he is full of compassion is a sign that he is a Vaishnav. This compassion can be present in the hearts of others, but it's especially present in the hearts of a Vaishnav. Vaishnav means one who is known as Paradukkaduki. This phrase was used to describe Raghunath Das Goswami, who was a great Vaishnav in our line, one of the six Goswamis. And it's used to describe Sanatana Goswami, used by Raghunath Das Goswami at the beginning of one of his books. And what that means is, paradukkha dukkhi means that you feel dukkha for others' dukkha. You feel pain for others' pain. This is what compassion literally means, is that you're empathetic. And if others are in misery, then you automatically feel that. You yourself may not have any separate cause of suffering, but that alone is a cause of suffering for you, because so many people are suffering. And we can see this is a real sign of civilization. Civilization cannot exist if everybody is always simply out for their own aggrandizement. Then it becomes the war of all against all, isn't it? There has to be, among civilized people, the sense of collective welfare that will sacrifice for the greater good, that there's some feeling for children who are helpless, who need education, for those who are less fortunate. This is a basic principle of civilization. But unless and until that compassion is really directed toward the soul, then although the feeling is good, it is ultimately wasted. And this example of rescuing the dress of a drowning man, maybe you didn't catch that in this purport, but it's a nice analogy. So if someone is drowning in the ocean here, right? And suppose he's got a wetsuit on. You on the right page there? Okay. So it can happen. You're going out to surf out there, and there's a riptide, right? And generally when they surf, they wear those wetsuits, isn't it? I'm not sure why, to keep warm. I think it's to help keep warm. And so if they're caught in the riptide, it can be fatal. A riptide, you know, pulls you out to sea, and you can't fight against it. You actually have to go crosswise in order to survive, to try to get away from it. I read about it. So suppose someone is out there, and they're floundering, and a surfer, and I think they have lifeguards. They must have lifeguards on the beach here. And they dive in, and they swim out, and they pull out, but they don't pull the person out. They just pull the wetsuit out. And they come back and say, oh, we saved the person. I said, what did you do? You know, the person just drowned, and you got the wetsuit. It's foolish, right? And of course, that would be highly condemned. So similarly, the body is a dress for the soul. In this chapter, Krishna will describe it that way. He gives some very nice analogies in this chapter. Just as all of us are wearing something here, so in the course of time, these clothes that we're wearing, whatever they may be, are going to wear out, and we'll have to discard them, right, eventually. So, okay, I'll give up this kurta, and I'll get a new kurta. Big deal, right? In the same way that we discard our old clothes and get new clothes, we discard our old bodies and get new bodies. It's kind of a revelation, isn't it? But that's exactly how it works. The self never dies. The body certainly does. And it gets old and decrepit and useless, and that's why we cast it aside eventually. When the soul can no longer stand to live in the body, it leaves. That's what happens. So now, if we want to do welfare, why just help someone's physical condition or even mental condition? These are not bad, but certainly they're not as good as giving someone a means and a knowledge in order to get, give the soul means of knowledge in order to get free of the body altogether. Eternal happiness, freedom from all misery forever. How can that compare? I mean, how can just helping a temporary body compare to eternal welfare of the soul? You see the difference. It's very important. So Arjuna was directing his compassion, because that's what it was. He wasn't afraid of dying. He's a Kshatriya. He's trained for that. That doesn't enter into the equation. He was afraid of killing. He didn't want to kill his relatives, his dear teacher and other Bhishma, other relatives were all on the other side, and so that's what was hanging him up. He didn't want to kill them for what? For the kingdom. Forget the kingdom. The kingdom will be drenched in blood of my dear relatives. Who cares? Let them have the kingdom, and I'll go to the forest. At least they'll be alive. So this is the thoughts of a compassionate soul. Forget it. I don't want the kingdom. You know. The problem is that the battle was not simply so he can enjoy the kingdom. That was not the purpose of it. The purpose of it was for the welfare of the whole world by reinstituting Dharma in the person of Yudhishthira, his elder brother, who's otherwise known as Dharma Raj, the king, but the king or the personification of Dharma religion. So Arjuna had miscalculated. You know, his impulse for compassion was good, but actually, as paradoxical as it may seem, his best act of compassion would be to fight the battle, kill the enemy, reinstitute Dharma, and for the whole world would then be under pious rule. And the added benefit is, and this is where the mystical, you know, transcendental element comes in, because the enemy would be killed in the presence of Krishna, they would also get liberation. You see? It's not just that they would die. No one dies. The soul, but the soul would get liberation because they're being they would die in the presence of Krishna. He was on the battlefield, on Arjuna's chariot. So it's a win-win for everybody if he fights. If he doesn't fight, then the battle will not be engaged, the Pandavas will lose, and Dharma will not be reinstated, and the souls who otherwise would have died in the presence of Krishna wouldn't die in the presence of Krishna. You see? So when you see it from that point of view, you see, oh, Arjuna can do the greatest compassion, the greatest good for fighting. He didn't see that. His knowledge is covered, his vision is covered at this point, and therefore he needs to have the Bhagavad Gita spoken to him. But this idea that Arjuna is full of compassion, and then that will be spoken of directly by Krishna in text number 11 when he begins his instructions per se to Arjuna, transcendental instructions. So, any comments on this little verse in purport? Arjuna overwhelmed by compassion. Yeah? Madhu is a demon.
Yeah,
the demon appeared at the beginning of the universe, and he stole the Vedas. He was killed by Vishnu, and the Vedas were saved. So Krishna is known as Madhusudana. But Madhu also here represents the doubts, or the demon. Is it the demon of Madhu? And I wanted to kill the demon of misunderstanding. Later on, it will be called the demon of doubt.
So did Madhu come before Brahma or after?
After, I believe. I'm going to have to research that. But it was right at the beginning of the universe, when the universe was being created. And the Vedas were not yet manifested. So they were stolen by Madhu and then restored by Vishnu and then given to Brahma. Yes? I'm not sure which prayer you're referring to.
The
lotus feet are
spiritual. The lotus feet are spiritual.
The only way by which you can attain pure devotional service.
There's a part where we say.
All right, the lotus feet are spiritual masters. Is the pure devotional service. I bow down to the lotus feet with great awe and reverence. By His grace, one can cross the ocean of material suffering, offering, and obtain the mercy of Krishna. My only wish is to have my conscience purified by the words emanating from His lotus mouth. Attachment to His lotus feet is the perfection that fulfills all desires.
It's hard to say.
I don't think that's in there.
So this compassion that the spiritual master is having, I mean, how? Because it says here, material compassion is a sign of ignorance of the real self.
Yes.
So, but suffering is material.
Yeah. Right. So the point is this: is that having compassion. Compassion is compassion, okay? In other words, someone's suffering and you feel for them. Now, what are you going to do about it? You can try to relieve the immediate suffering. Or you can, relieve the immediate suffering and give them knowledge by which they'll never suffer again. You see what I mean? In other words, the spiritual master says, oh, people are suffering because they have a material body. And in this particular, at any given moment, you may not be suffering. You may think, I'm doing okay. I got a full belly. I can have an apartment here. I'm cool. We're good. But actually, we know the next moment, or down the road a little bit, there's going to be agonizing suffering. Old age, disease, and death is coming, right? The earthquake is coming, right? In other words, it's just a false illusion that we're not suffering. We may be at a little point where our suffering is diminished a little bit, and we think, oh, now we're good. But actually, we're all in for it. We have to face it. That's what life is all about. So there's no point, and maybe it's a good impulse. All right, let me feed the hungry and educate, and cure the sick and so forth. That's fine. But on a larger understanding is that that's going to happen. In other words, that happens in society. It's good. There are already groups that are doing that. The government itself, can do much more than each individual can for feeding the hungry or for helping if they did. But who's teaching the knowledge and the practice by which you can get rid of suffering eternally for good, so there'll be no more suffering? So that real compassion is to focus on that, if you understand it, and to give out the knowledge, such as Bhagavad Gita, by which people can practice, and then one more time around, okay, old age, disease, and death, then no more. You see? So it's a compassion which is informed by real knowledge. And that's transcendental. it's not material compassion. You know, it's helping the soul to get rid of bodily pains altogether. All right, let's go on. This is Krishna speaking here, and there's going to be a little talk, a little conversation now on the basis of Kshatriya spirit. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Kutastva Kashmilamidam, Vishame Samapastitam, Anaryajishtama Svargyam, Akirti Kanamarjuna. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, my dear Arjuna, how have these impurities come upon you? They are not at all befitting a man who knows the value of life. They lead not to higher planets, but to infamy. Purport, Krishna and the Supreme Personality of Godhead are identical. Therefore, Lord Krishna is referred to as Bhagavan throughout the Gita. Bhagavan is the ultimate in the absolute truth. The absolute truth is realized in three phases of understanding, namely Brahman, or the impersonal, all-pervasive spirit, Paramatma, or the localized aspect of the Supreme within the heart of all living entities, and Bhagavan, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 1-11, this conception of the absolute truth is explained thus. Padanti tattavadas tattvam yajnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabjate. The absolute truth is realized in three phases of understanding by the knower of the absolute truth, and all of them are identical. Such phases of the absolute truth are expressed as Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. These three divine aspects can be explained by the example of the sun, which also has three different aspects, namely the sunshine, the sun's surface, and the sun planet itself. One who studies the sunshine only is the preliminary student. One who understands the sun's surface is further advanced, and one who can enter into the sun planet is the highest. Ordinary students who are satisfied by simply understanding the sunshine, its universal pervasiveness, and the glaring effulgence of its impersonal nature, may be compared to those who can realize only the Brahman feature of the absolute truth. The student who has advanced still further can know the sun disk, which is compared to knowledge of the Paramatma feature of the absolute truth. And the student who can enter into the heart of the sun planet is compared to those who realize the personal features of the Supreme Absolute Truth. Therefore, the bhaktas, or the transcendentalists who have realized the Bhagavan feature of the absolute truth, are the topmost transcendentalists, although all students who are engaged in the study of the absolute truth are engaged in the same subject matter. The sunshine, the sun disk, and the inner affairs of the sun planet cannot be separated from one another. And yet the students of the three different phases are not in the same category. The Sanskrit word Bhagavan is explained by the great authority Parashara Muni, the father of Vyasadeva. The Supreme Personality who possesses all riches, all strength, all fame, all beauty, all knowledge, and all renunciation is called Bhagavan. There are many persons who are very rich, very powerful, very beautiful, very famous, very learned, and very much detached. But no one can claim that he possesses all riches, all strength, etc., entirely. Only Krishna can claim this because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No living entity, including Brahma, Lord Shiva, or Narayan, can possess opulences as fully as Krishna. Therefore, it is concluded in the Brahma Sanhita by Lord Brahma himself that Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No one is equal to or above him. He is the primeval Lord, or Bhagavan, known as Govinda, and he is the supreme cause of all causes. Ishvarak Paramak Krishna, Satchidananda Vigraha, Anadiradiya Govinda, Sarvakarna Karanam. There are many personalities possessing the qualities of Bhagavan, but Krishna is the supreme because none can excel him. He is the supreme person, and his body is eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. He is the primeval Lord, Govinda, and the cause of all causes. Brahma Samhita 5.1. In the Bhagavatam also, there is a list of many incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but Krishna is described as the original personality of Godhead, from whom many, many incarnations and personalities of Godhead expand. Ete chang sakalapangso, Krishnas tu Bhagavan swayam, Indradi vyakulam lokam, vidyanti yuge yuge. All the lists of the incarnations of Godhead submitted herewith are either plenary expansions or parts of the plenary expansions of the Supreme Godhead. But Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, Bhagavatam 1.3.28. Therefore, Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, the source of both the Supersoul and the impersonal Brahman. In the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Arjuna's lamentation for his kinsmen is certainly unbecoming. And therefore, Krishna expressed his surprise with the word kutaha, where from? Such impurities were never expected from a person belonging to the civilized class of men known as Aryans. The word Aryan is applicable to persons who know the value of life and have a civilization based on spiritual realization. Persons who are led by the material conception of life do not know that the aim of life is realization of the Absolute Truth, Vishnu, or Bhagavan. And they are captivated by the external features of the material world, and therefore, they do not know what liberation is. Persons who have no knowledge of the liberation from material bondage are called non-Aryans. Although Arjuna was a Kshatriya, he was deviating from his prescribed duties by declining to fight. This act of cowardice is described as befitting the non-Aryans. Such deviation from duty does not help one in the progress of spiritual life, nor does it even give one the opportunity to become famous in this world. Lord Krishna did not approve of the so-called compassion of Arjuna for his kinsmen. So, nice purport here. So this this statement by Krishna is really a statement that one kshatriya would give to another. In other words, why are you shrinking from the fight? You know, this is not a very pious thing to do, very cultured thing to do. And in the next verse, you will more or less call Arjuna. Arjuna will reply, and then Krishna will. There's another verse here where Krishna will say, "You're yielding to this degrading impotence," and so forth. So in these two statements of Krishna, there's nothing really transcendental. He's just speaking as one kshatriya to another. He's trying to encourage his master, quote, Arjuna, who's the fighter, and Krishna's taken the role of the servant as a charioteer. So this is the charioteer's job, is to try to buck up the courage and the boldness of the fighter. This is one of the things that they do. So Krishna is doing that. And at the same time, this is a very strong word, anaryajishtam. He's calling him an Aryan, which is really an insult. Because Arjuna is very much an Aryan. He's not an Aryan, if you forgive the confusion there. But Arjuna will not respond to this argument of Krishna's. The fact that he's calling him a coward and a eunuch, you know, and all this stuff, which should really, you know, strike like a serpent, you know. I still can't do it. You know, he says, I don't care. And he's got a little speech here. When the verses get longer, then you know that there's like a little eulogy coming. It's a high point. So that's going to happen. Arjuna's going to come into the long verse format. And so it's important to realize that this argument of Krishna's, this speech, is not effective. He's going to have to go to a higher level to finally convince Arjuna. And that higher level is really the substance of the Bhagavad Gita itself. Eventually, Arjuna will, at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, of course, agree to fight. So Prabhupada devotes this practically this entire purport here to simply this one word, Bhagavan. This word Bhagavan literally means the possessor of all opulence. And as Prabhupada mentions here, this is the highest conception of the Absolute Truth. In Krishna consciousness, everything begins kind of with this injunction from the Vedanta Sutra. You know, atato brahma jigyasa. Now then, at this point in life, you know, understanding, being inquisitive into the Absolute Truth, one should inquire into the Absolute Truth. Don't waste your human life. And then what is the Absolute Truth? Janmadyasya yataha. That from which everything is emanated or takes birth. That's the basic definition of God. If you go to any religion, they have to agree, if they have any conception of God at all, you know, that he's the creator of everything. right? That he's, where, if there's something else that's the creator, then how can, you know, you have a God? So that's the basic definition, the creator of everything. But then you have to ask, well, what is that everything? What is that everything? Now let's work our way back. And if God, or the absolute truth, or whatever you want to call it, is the creator of everything, then let's look what we have. Well, what do we got? We can look around and see. And we have a vast variety of what we call energies or entities, right? You can classify this energy, and the Greeks did this. You know, of course, they got some of their knowledge from the East also. All right, you know, solid matter. We can certainly agree on that, right? There's also gases. All right, that's another category. Liquids? Sure. How about fire? All right, so we got four: earth, water, fire, right, and air. And then you have to have space that holds everything. So now that gets a little bit more ethereal. We call it ether. So we got earth, water, fire, air, ether. These are what we experience every day, right? And then we also experience at every moment the internal things, the mind. No one can deny that we all have a mind. We can't see it or smell it, but it's there, right? And then we have discriminating faculty. We all have some intelligence. And finally, we have the sense of self, right? That's also part of it, the ego, very subtle element. So these eight elements are, this is Sankhya, this is analysis, you see. We see all that. But that's just the raw materials. You know, that's kind of a boring categorization. What's really interesting is all the shapes and the forms and the colors and the experiences and the emotions and personality and relationships. That's something. That's also here. So that must be there also. You can't have this, have something in the effect that's not in the cause. So the absolute truth must have personality. We have it. Why can't he must have it? Otherwise, he's not God. You see the logic? This is right there at the beginning of the Ishopanishad, when Prabhupada starts his Ishopanishad commentary. The absolute truth must have everything within our experience and beyond our experience, otherwise he can't be absolute. So this conception of the absolute truth as a person takes in every other concept. There's these basic three concepts as of the all-pervading spirit, the Brahman. We say, aham brahmasmi. We are all spirit. We are not matter. That's the first lesson in Krishna consciousness. We're spirit souls. We're not this, they're not this matter. We are what pervades this body. We are not the body itself. We are the consciousness that pervades the body. So that's the first thing. But that's very nebulous, you see. Then nebulous means indefinite. That's why we say nirvishesha, shunyavadi. Every day we say, Nama Om Vishnu Badaya Krishna Vaishnaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschita Deshatarine. So what is that Nirvishesha? Prabhupada is saving us from these misconceptions by giving us the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. That's what this says. Gauravani means the words or philosophy of Lord Chaitanya. Pacharine. Pacharine is a great word. It sounds just like preach. And more or less that's what it means. Pracharana means to spread or teach or preach. So he's teaching the teachings, the words of Lord Chaitanya, and in this way, delivering us, the Western worlds especially, in that time and beginning, from Nirvishesha Shunyavadi. Nirvishesha means no details. That's the ethereal, nebulous, all-pervading oneness called Brahman, the white light. You see? That's the beginning conception of the absolute truth. Unchanging, pure consciousness, all-pervading. It's there. We can't see it now with our material eyes, but it's everywhere. Then there's the localized, what we call Paramatma. There's two souls in everybody, not just one. There's the individual soul, Jivatma, and then the super soul, Paramatma. What does this Paramatma do? Paramatma is Krishna. He is the expansion of Krishna. And he's the same Paramatma in all of us. That's why if we relate to each other on the basis of Paramatma, we'll always have harmony. It's when we divide, we get affected by false ego, and we see ourselves all as different, based on the body, the age, the ethnic, whatever it is, then we clash, because we all have separate interests. So the same Paramatma is in everyone's heart. And what does he do? He's overseeing what we're doing, giving us intelligence, giving us forgetfulness, if we want it. Sarvasachaha mridi sannivishto mattak smritir gyanam apohanancha. Krishna says in 15th chapter. Sarvasachaha. I am in the hearts of all, and from me come knowledge and forgetfulness and remembrance also. So, super soul is everywhere. He's pervading every atom, sustaining everything, the universe. But he's not having lila. You can't really have a full-on relationship with the super soul. You see? His function is just to accompany us. It's talk about compassion. This is Krishna's compassion on us. He stays with us no matter where we are in this material world. We go to the dog's body, the worm's body, the demigod's body. He's with us as super soul. Always ready to give us information how to get out if we want it. Or if we want to stay, then he can help us to get the intelligence how we can stay here forever. Give us intelligence. So this is super soul. A localized aspect. Not just all pervading life, but localized aspect of the personality. It has a form, Vishnu form there. But then beyond this Paramatma is Bhagavan. Now Bhagavan also has the Brahman effulgence. It's his glow. Bodily glow. It's coming. He also is the source of the Paramatma. But he also has all of these pastimes that we read about. This is the full personality. All the relationships we can have in this world, he has. Friend to friend, father, servant, lover, husband, whatever we have here in terms of personal relationship and personal qualities, wit, right, joking, gravity, honesty, humility, all of them are there in perfection in Krishna. Beauty, is it? That's far beyond Paramatma. This is the meaning of the word Bhagavan. And we are indebted to Parashara Muni for this nice definition. What is that? Aishwaryasya samagrasya viryasya yashashakshaya dhyana vairagyashtaiva shannam bhaga itingana. There's that word bhaga, or bhaga itingana. Bhagavan has these six in full. Wealth, power, knowledge, fame, beauty, and renunciation, detachment. So Prabhupada makes it clear that there may be some very wealthy people, very, you know, beautiful people, but no one can claim we have all the beauty, all the wealth, you know, like that. And whatever we have in terms of these opulences, very fleeting. Only as long as the body lasts, and often not that long. How long does beauty last? It's like a flower, you know, the flower. We offer these flowers, you know, sometimes, occasionally we have some really nice flowers, fragrant flowers, but within, you know, a half an hour or less, they're less attractive, less beautiful. So that's true of any physical beauty. It's very fleeting, but it depends on a very specific combination of material elements, you know, and that doesn't last. So if we want eternal beauty, we should go for Krishna. That's where the beauty lies. And then we can also be eternally beautiful because we reflect that. But if we go for this body, you know, a pale reflection, then, like, you know, those opulences are very fleeting, and whatever we have is not going to last. So let me go through this purport. It's quite a long purport. See if I miss some things. And okay, it quotes the Bhagavatam on these three levels of. The sun disk, oftentimes it's the sun, okay, sunshine is all pervading, it's in the sky, the sun disk is localized, and the sun god, okay, the sun god is on the planet, and he has all, you know, he also glows and he's also localized, but he has personality. Three levels there, it's easy to understand. Okay. Bhagavan explained, Ishvara quotes from the Brahma Sanghita. You should know this verse, Ishvara Parama Krishna. Then the verse from Bhagavatam, Ete Chansa Kala Pungsa. This verse is said to be the key verse in the Bhagavatam by Jiva Goswami. Ete Chansa Kala Pungsa. So, what is a Kala and what is an Ansha? An Ansha means like a partial manifestation. Kala is a plenary, or vice versa. But the point is that there are plenary expansions and there's partial expansions of Krishna. And they appear like Nrsingadev. Now, Nrsingadev certainly has the power of Krishna, right? But he doesn't have the flute. He doesn't have the charm, the all-encompassing charm that Krishna has. You know, he's Krishna, but he doesn't manifest all the qualities that Krishna has. So, Rama has almost the same, but he doesn't have the kind of all-encompassing abandon, enjoyment that Krishna has with all the gopis. Only one wife, you know, so he doesn't quite manifest all Krishna's qualities. So all these different expansions or plenary or partial expansions are expansions of Krishna, Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. Try to remember that phrase, Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. We used to put that on all the letters. You know, one of these things that becomes famous. Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is God. You know, there's so many different manifestations of God, but Krishna, the threefold bending form that we know, that is God himself. He has all of the qualities in full, six qualities in full, manifested. Okay, all right, we've covered everything. Any questions on these points? I guess we've run out of time. I'm sorry, I went over time. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hari Hari Bhagavan.